Are you ready? Swizzy. It's your girl, Estelle. It's out to my people.
Welcome to episode 40 of Black Girl Squee, where we celebrate Black Girl Magic with a squee! I am your co-host, Enda, also known as Enda's Corner on Twitter.
I'm Dee Dee. I go by Dust Daughter on Twitter.
Collectively, we are Black Girl Squee at Black Girl Squee on Twitter. We also have a Tumblr, blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com. If you want to contact us, give us feedback, or just tell us how you like or aren't liking the show, you can email us at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. You can also find us on iTunes. You can rate and give us a review. We'd appreciate that very much. And, of course, you can also find us on our our hosting home at blackgirlsquee.simplecast.fm. If you would like to support the show, we have Patreons. You can find Black Girl Squee at patreon.com, blackgirlsquee. And I also have one as Enda Lauren on Patreon. Okay, a couple of housekeeping notes. We have a spoiler policy, meaning we spoil shit. Usually shows that center Black women, but we'll see how that goes considering the new television schedules and such coming up right now. So we won't talk about that though right now. So
yeah, they look pretty white.
Very. And also, as a warning, we cuss a lot and we talk about peen a lot. So if any of that bothers you, you're just going to have to skip our DWIDP, the cussing I can't help you with, because that can happen at any goddamn time. And also, we squee loud, as you heard at the beginning of the show, and we squee often, so adjust your volume accordingly.
Especially when Enda gets started.
Okay, our squee-worthy news.
All right. Hopefully y'all have read this great profile in Elle magazine, written by Rachel Kadzi Ganza. It's called How Missy Elliott Became an Icon, and it is so freaking awesome. Please, please read this. And it's when you get a great Black woman writer together with a great subject for a profile, it's just magic. And you can see how much Ganza loves Missy Elliott, and it's just, the love is just dripping in every word. She notices a lot of things that Missy doesn't really say outright. She noticed that Missy is communal and sentimental in a way that hip-hop at times denies itself. Mm. She noticed that when Missy told her about a last-minute sleepover party that featured Mary J. Blige, Queen Latifah, Misa Hilton, her stylist, and Little Kim. They all came out to Virginia for Missy's birthday a few years ago.
Aww.
And Missy said she felt touched that they could be real friends, not just friends for the camera. Oh.
Yeah, I know, right?
A lot of people know the basics about Missy. She's born Melissa Arnett Elliott in Portsmouth, Virginia. She said she always wanted to be a superstar. She was always telling her mother that. Her mother was a gospel singer, and she could have gone on tour, but she stayed home and became a homemaker. Missy's mother was beaten almost every day by her father, by Missy's father. Missy was hit once. An older, well, older than her member of the family abused her sexually since she was 8. And, Missy's mother was reluctant for Missy to talk about this stuff, but she felt it was important to put that out there. Missy said in the article, "We are survivors, and once we know that, we are unstoppable. I always said I wouldn't be no other color because if there's one thing about us, we never really had, but we know how to survive." Whew. And the reason why Missy dropped out of the music scene for a long time was because she was dealing with a thyroid condition called Graves' disease, and she was diagnosed with that in the late 2000s. So before the Super Bowl performance with a cultural appropriator who will not be named on this show, Missy had a panic attack that required medical care. I did not know that.
I would have never guessed. I would have
Ooh.
never guessed that. You couldn't tell.
Exactly. Nope. She said to herself, "If I can get over this first step, then I know all my dance steps will be on point." Yeah. Yeah. And they were. She did that.
Because who actually remembers who headlined now? Missy stole it.
Basically, it was her halftime. And
Yep.
they really need to bring her back and just let her do five songs.
Yeah, they need to just let her do show because it's like when Prince did his show, he did all stuff from like the Purple Rain era, you know?
Because that's the only thing white people know.
Oh. But the thing with Missy, she could just do stuff off of Super Duper Fly and the second album, and she could have five songs right there, and that would be, and she could make that show.
And if they just want her to have guests, she can have guests.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people are dying to perform with Missy Elliott.
I mean, she's still writing songs for him, right?
So, speaking of, she's written over 500 songs for herself and others, and produced countless other songs. She's like the definition of prolific. And it was interesting. There's a great part in the profile about how, when the video for The Rain came out and she created this look with the
To
wearing the
the garbage bag.
garbage bag, an early New Yorker profile referred to that look as Cyber Mammy.
Wow.
Yeah. See, this is why it's important for black people and especially black women to be critiquing of the art of other black people and other black women. 'Cause Anyway, I just have to read some of this great prose. But Missy has never served or played servant to anyone in her life. There is nothing about Missy now or then that could belong in anything but a prosperous, liberated future. She even sings in Work It, Pitch a Black saying, "Yes, sir, massa, no." A mammy as a trope was never a self-defined, self-articulating, sexualized woman. We knew nothing of her pleasure. If anything, the trash bag suit in the rain was about taking it all with you, the rarely spoken about black woman's pleasure principle. And who has written more songs about being sexually satisfied and self-satisfying than Missy Elliott? Remember, she wrote Oops, Oh My, the hit sung by Tweet.
Oh, yeah. I know she just said, I didn't know she wrote it.
Yeah. The knowledge that you are beautiful, it is having been denied and returning tender, exuberant, monumental, and hyper-dimensional. And when Missy talks about that outfit, she says it was a way to mask my shyness behind all the chaos of the look. Although I am shy, I was never afraid to be a provocative woman. The outfit was a symbol of power. I loved the idea of feeling like a hip-hop Michelin woman. I knew I could have on a blow-up suit and still have people talking.
Yep.
It was bold and different. So, I mean, there's just so many gems, but what blew me away and what blew a lot of people away, especially Saeed Jones from BuzzFeed Books, the paragraph that blew them away was the one about Missy's 2015 song, WTF, Where They From. We've already talked about it on an earlier episode, but I learned something new. Apparently there is a sample of a young girl speaking on the record, and the voice belongs to Rachel Jontel, who is the friend of Trayvon Martin, and she was on the phone with him when he was murdered. Kadzi Ganza writes, "Missy doesn't bring this up. I do. She goes almost mute when I say that by sampling Jontel's voice, Pharrell and she have done a remarkable thing that has reversed what usually happens to the words of girls who look like Rachel Jontel. They have preserved them for the record, credited her for her voice and her words, and made sure she got paid." The witness becomes the writer. From the test comes the testimony. Can we just give her a Pulitzer or some sort of award now?
Yeah, give her the Peabody.
Something.
Because
I mean that paragraph blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was not aware.
Me either. But I will say, for like, I think if this had been anybody else, they might have taken Rachel Jontel's voice and her words and they would have just used it. And like, oh, well, we thought it wasn't, but no. They made her involved. They got her involved and compensated her.
But even the choice to even use her voice.
Yes.
Is political and it's a statement.
Yes.
Because she was getting clowned and ridiculed, attacked online, offline, in court.
And just thinking about that, especially listening to that lawyer telling her to speak English would have shut the, oh God.
So for Missy to choose to use her voice
Yes.
as is, that says so much about, basically fuck your respectability, fuck your white gaze, fuck your, oh, this is the proper way to speak, blah, blah, blah,
Yep.
and uplifting this dark-skinned, plus-size black girl. Can you not? How can you not love Missy Elliott? That's brilliant and womanist and
Yes.
awesome. So just so please run, don't walk, run to elle.com and read this profile, read it twice. It's so good. It's so rewarding.
And y'all, Missy has been in this for 20 years. Super Duper Fly came out when I was in college in
Yep.
97. 20 years. Black women do not get this type of shelf life in hip hop.
And it's because she does, she can do it all.
Yes.
She can write the song, she can produce the song. She can execute her own ideas. She doesn't, like, everybody says, oh, what would she be without Timbaland? She'd still
She
be
be
Missy fucking
Varsheese.
Elliott.
Exactly.
She'd still be writing hit songs for other people. She, like,
She knows how
Missy's
to
her all.
collaborate. Yeah, she knows how to collaborate. That's not a bad thing, but she still has her own ideas. She has her own style, and she does her own thing.
Her art is her own.
Yep.
I mean, she co-choreographed I'm Better.
Wow.
And even, I mean, even beyond, having input on all the videos and stuff.
Yep.
I mean, she writes the songs, she produces them, she collaborates with the directors of her music videos, which are still
They still
from the
look
future.
exactly, because I was just thinking about Sokka Tunny. She's Mega Man.
That's my shit right there. That is my shit. The song,
God.
the video, all of
No,
it.
I think
Anyway.
one of my faves though, She's a Bitch. They were because just like a couple of months ago, they were talking about is jewelry like on the face or around the eye about to be a thing, and I'm like,
Missy was doing that 20 years ago.
exactly. Because look, go back and look at She's a Bitch. Look at what she's wearing on her face. Look at it. She has diamonds or something like, or some type of gems on her eyes. Around her eyes. She was already doing it. Every time white girls think they done got something done new, just go back about a couple of decades and you'll see black girls have already done that shit.
Basically. Oh, so just read it and just read this and get you some Missy Elliott music in your life, watch some videos. Just if you don't know about Missy, make sure you know about Missy.
Yes.
Soon.
Yeah.
So to Rachel Kadziganza and the prolific, the brilliant, Missy Elliott. We give a big
Right. Okay. Next squeeworthy news. Unless you have been in a cave somewhere hibernating, then you should know that the trailer for the new Star Trek series Discovery has been released. Of course, as you may know, Sinequa Martin Green is the lead of this series. She's a commander, so that means that Michelle Yeoh is the captain of this. So we have two women of color who passed the Bechdel test in the trailer for this. I mean, so yeah, we already got that there. And apparently CBS has already increased the episode order from 13 to 15. And this is a series. It's going to be, oh, they're going to air the pilot on CBS, but then they're going to put the rest of the series on their CBS All Access app. So you're going to need to buy that if you're interested in it. They're also doing a companion after show called Talking Trek. And I hope to God they have women of color helm in that show, because if not, it's not. See,
what we're saying is we don't need to see Chris, what's his face?
Yeah.
Hosting another after show.
We do not. We really do not.
No.
But if we have to remedy that, I might have to remedy that. But I see you have a theory that Sonequa's character is half Vulcan. I actually think she might be too, because of the way the trailer played out. And like, yeah, she looks like she might be part Vulcan.
And I'm wondering why I'm not reading that in enough articles. I've read several articles about this trailer, and even some where they break down scene by scene what we see in the trailer.
And
they're like, and some of them are even arguing against the possibility that she could be half Vulcan. But I'm like, every time you see her and she's talking about Star Trek Discovery, what does she do? She throws up the Vulcan salute to live long and prosper.
And it looks like they kind of have her ears a bit covered. So I'm wondering if that's supposed to be some type of reveal. Like, we're not supposed to know yet. But I'm like, it's kind of obvious.
You're hinting at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I mean, in one scene, she has this pixie haircut.
Yeah.
But you can see that her ears are shaped.
Yeah, her ears.
Kind of oval shaped.
Yeah. Her, that's what I was looking at. I'm like, her ears look like she almost has Spock ears. Or Tuvok years.
Mm-hmm.
So, honestly, there are a few. I'm a bit excited about it now, because I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get my hopes up, because there are so many ways to be let down. But after seeing, you know, even from the first few seconds when they're on the in the desert. And like somebody else was pointing out too, with what they're wearing on the desert, that looks like a Vulcan clothing. It looks like Vulcan attire.
So maybe they could be on Vulcan.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I also have to say with this, I'm excited about Michelle Yeoh's character, because I realized when I was watching it, and I'm glad somebody else actually said it too, she has an accent. It's not a USian accent. It's not an English accent. It's not Canadian. She has an accent that is not from that is not a white person.
Right.
And so I'm like, not only is she a woman of color, she's a woman of color representing. She's representing her own folks. You know, I don't know if the word native is what I want to use. But she's, well, because I really don't want to sound, I don't want it to sound horrible, but you know what I mean. She has that, well, she has that accent, and she's a captain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to mean something. Okay, so I'm glad to see that representation there.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm so excited. I'm so ready for this. And when it's not going to air until the fall. They've had, you know, issues with I think, you know, Brian Fuller left to do American Gods, and I think so far they've only filmed 6 of the 15 episodes, so
okay.
We're not gonna get the show until the fall, but I need it now.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it also. I think that those two characters, Michelle Yeoh's and Sonequa Martin Green's characters, they look like they have a mentor-mentee relationship. And being able to see these two women of color have that type of relationship, because it looks like Michelle Yeoh has taken Sonequa under her wings. Like, I think it's time we talk about giving you your own command. And I'm like, wow.
Yes. And judging by all the, when you look at the cast list and you see all the names of the captains and commanders and officers that are going to be on the show, I think we're not going to be, I think Discovery's not going to be the only ship that we focus on in this show. So that'll be interesting to, you know, to deal with several Starfleets in one show. So I'm just excited. This looks
Yeah.
really, really, really good,
It
and
does.
I'm ready to see black folks in sci-fi,
Yes.
even if they're half black, half Vulcan. Especially
Yeah.
when have we seen a black woman Vulcan on TV?
I don't think I've seen a woman, because quite frankly, the only black Vulcan I can even think of is Tuvok, and I didn't really watch Voyager. I couldn't stay into that one.
No, me either. So,
But
I need this. I need this now. Hurry up, CBS.
yeah.
And you know, we won't. I'm not even gonna waste time talking about All Access, because you know that is not where I will be watching it. So
We already know it's not me either.
we know where we're going, and we're
Yeah.
not telling y'all because we don't want to be implicated
Nope.
or arrested. We're not catching no cases.
Nope.
So to Sonequa Martin Green and Michelle Yeoh and Star Trek Discovery, we give a big Xscape will reunite at Essence Fest. They're going to work with Mona Scott to produce a docu-series, a biopic, and they're gonna have some new music out. Not a whole album, but some new songs. And this happened because the group caught wind that somebody was doing an unauthorized movie about Xscape.
What?
And we felt it was important for us to tell our own story instead of somebody else telling it. So, Candy says she hasn't spoken with Tamika Scott in a while. There's two Tamikas in the group, as you'll remember. Tamika Scott and Tamika Tiny Cottle, formerly Harris. Yeah, Candy and Tamika had a falling out after the group broke up. When Candy was expressing to Tiny, Tamika Cottle, how she felt about the story not being told right, Tiny passed the message on to everybody else, and it turned out that everybody was on the same page. So, Latasha Scott, which is Tamika Scott's sister, said of the breakup that we didn't have that unbiased person there to kind of come in and be that buffer and say, you're right or you're wrong, but let's just fix it. And because of that, we grew apart. Tamika Tiny Cottle said that Tamika Scott, Latasha and I were talking about the good old days and what we thought would make it work. From there, I got them together at the radio station so we could start discussing our movie, but it ended up turning into something much bigger.
Aw, that's nice.
Yeah, so it looks like, you know, Candy and Tamika Scott might have had a falling out, but Tamika Cotto was talking to everybody.
Yeah.
So she's cool with everybody.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a docuseries working with Mona Scott's entertainment company called Mona Me or something like that. And it will give fans a behind-the-scenes look at how hard the ladies have been working to make their comeback. And then with the biopic, the ladies are looking forward to telling their whole truth about some of the things they went through as young girls who were new to the entertainment industry.
Yeah, they were like teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were coming. They were around the same time as TLC.
Yep.
Which is funny because Candy and Tiny wrote No Scrubs for TLC.
Yep, exactly.
So shout out to women who write, because that song was huge.
Yep.
And they got some money from Ed Sheeran because he tried to be slick and use part of No Scrubs but not give them credit, and they. And then he eventually had to give them writing credit. But sorry, tangent back to the biopic, telling their whole truth. Tamika Scott says, "There were a lot of things we had to experience as young girls in this industry that at the time it wasn't cute or acceptable to talk about. So now we feel like we can just tell our story because we feel like it may help somebody else who might be going through the same things that we did. We all have different stories, and we want to let people know the real story that was hidden."
Yep.
Oh, shit. Yeah. It's going to be good. Yeah. I think we're going to get into some colorism and some size issues, because remember, the makeup of Escape was three dark-skinned women and Tiny Cottle, who is biracial.
Oh. And plus, one of them is actually a big girl, too.
Yeah, that's...
Well, they're all big girls now. Yeah, they're all big girls now.
Yeah, and Lord, I remember the first time I saw the video for Just Kicking It, I was like, why is this Asian girl hanging out with these black chicks? I was like, oh, she black too? Oh, okay. All right. She just light-skinned it in.
Yeah.
But I for real thought she was Asian. And then the Love on My Mind video, when I think it was Latasha, she was like pregnant as shit, and she was doing them dance moves hard.
See, now I'm gonna have to go back
like,
and watch it again.
That baby out.
Dang, so one of them got a 25-year-old. Wow. Aren't two of them, Candy and Tiny, they're on like Real Housewives of Atlanta or something now, right? Or they were.
Candy is. Tiny had her reality show with her ex-husband. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad she left him. Anyway.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad that she's doing this, and they about to just reminisce about the time when they were like on top of the pop scene, and people will stop saying that Tiny ain't never did shit since besides meeting T.I. and marrying him and having children. Like
she's been in this business since she was a child. And she's a songwriter.
She's written hits on top of hits. And
And
she got a Grammy to show for it.
I know. And listen,
her ass.
Look, Faith is also very essential to the music scene that was coming up in Atlanta at the time, because that's when Atlanta was just starting to rise. You know, with them, Outkast, them, Goody Mob, and all of that. Atlanta was. Yes. Yes. TLC.
That whole So Def,
yes.
LA, LaFace, like,
yes.
Collective.
Yeah.
Like, they were it when it came to R&B. Like, and y'all just go on YouTube and type in Xscape, and you will remember all the bops they made.
Yeah.
I mean, we talking about just kicking it. Understanding, bitch.
Child.
Oh my God, I love that song.
Hold up, you have to. I don't know if you heard it, but a couple of weeks ago, Another Round. They were they were talking about
Tonight.
Was it a talent show? Yeah, actually, first of all, I love Tonight. Okay, that was
that
one of my favorite songs of theirs. Yes,
we going back to cassettes now. I wore that song out on the cassette. I would listen to it late at night, and just blast it, because those harmonies was hitting, and they was singing.
Yes. And I think she was talking about they were trying to do it like at a talent show or something like that.
No, they were doing it in the shower. They were like taking synchronized showers and shit.
You try to sing harmony in a shower.
But that song, though,
that's
a tough-ass song to sing, especially when you don't think you can sing very well.
Yeah.
Like, but you want to sing that song?
Yeah.
You got to be able to sing.
And so y'all have to understand, Tonight is almost a cappella. There's a little guitar in the background, but it's basically a cappella. So that means you have to have a voice for that song. You have to know how to harmonize with, you know, the rest of the group. And they did it beautifully, you know.
And there's a clip going around on Essence's Twitter where they're reunited and they're singing Tonight.
Aww.
And they still got it, bitch. I was like, I'm living. And Tiny was hitting them notes, and Candy was like, come on, Tiny, come on.
so glad it's like the older, wiser thing now. Like, we had all this, let's put it behind us and let's do this.
Let's squash this.
Yeah.
And, you know, go make some more history.
Yep.
And some more money.
Yep.
Let's do this.
Yep.
So the biopic will feature new music from Xscape, and it will celebrate their 25-year anniversary of their first number one hit, Just Kicking It.
And that was their first song.
I'm sorry.
Kick off your shoes and
relax your feet.
And party on down to the Xscape beat. Just kick it.
Just kick it. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. That song is a jam. Whatever.
Yeah.
What the? I think at the time I was more into TLC, but I still had all their albums.
Yeah. It's like one thing I noticed about Xscape, though, is like a couple, as they, you know, kept going, they seemed to get more into adult contemporary stuff. Or that stuff didn't have that hip hop soul sound that they started out with.
They did a lot more ballads.
Yeah, exactly.
The end of their,
The Arms of the One Who Loves You and stuff like that.
Who Can I Run To?
Yeah.
Bitch. that used to be on everybody's voicemail, though.
Yep.
The beginning strains of it.
Yep.
So. Anyway, so Tamika Cottle, Tiny, says, we're some real bosses and just women hustling. We've been out of the picture, but we've never missed a beat. And now we're just back to give y'all a little bit more of what we gave you in the 90s. All right, come through.
And we'll take it.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm excited.
We will take it. Yes.
Yeah. because I like what they were doing. I liked like them and TLC. They were like feminist girl groups. They were tomboyish.
Yeah, they were black feminist girl groups.
Yeah, but they were giving you a black woman's point of view. They were just being honest about what they wanted, what they liked, and expressing themselves. Yeah. And I'm just here for all of that.
To put it in today's context, they would be called ratchet.
I think they're brilliant. I mean, TLC.
Oh, I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, this is what we would call, if they were out now, we'd call them ratchet, but we'd celebrate their ratchetness.
Hey, I celebrate it.
Yes.
Cheers to you. I'm ready for this reunion. I'm ready for the biopic, all of it. So, to the ladies of Escape, Candy Burris, Tamika Cottle, Tamika Scott, Latasha Scott, we give a big
scream!
Just kidding.
All right. Okay. So, for more television news, Misha Green. Why did I say Misha Graham? Misha Green is going to be at the helm of a show called Lovecraft Counties on HBO with Jordan Peele.
Oh, it's country. I'm sorry. That's a typo.
Lovecraft
it's country.
Lovecraft Country. I should have known that. All right. The HBO gave the show a straight to series order. And the show is being described as an anthological horror series that reclaims genre storytelling from the African-American perspective, and is based on a novel by Matt Ruff of the same name. Please tell me this is going to be like Tales from the Hood. Misha Green is going to write the series, so I'm already on board for that.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, the article says that Lovecraft Country follows 25-year-old Atticus Black, who joins up with his childhood friend Letitia and his Uncle George to embark on a road trip across 1950s Jim Crow America to find his missing father. The journey sets off their fight to survive and overcome both the racist terrors of white America and malevolent spirits. Well, that just sounds horrifying.
Misha never writes nothing easy, does she?
No. No.
She's not into the light and fluffy at all.
Nah. Like, what was one of some of the most horrific times in history for black people in this country?
And antebellum slavery?
Yes.
And Jim Crow America.
But, like I said, but she's writing, and I trust her writing. So, I will definitely be giving this a chance.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that Jordan Peele slid out of that Akira discussion. Smooth as shit, because like it felt like a trap.
Yeah.
I'm like, you just did a whole ass movie on cultural appropriation.
Yep.
And you about to get caught culturally appropriating. But no. I'm glad that he slid right out of it and just said, you know, I want to tell new stories.
Yeah.
And moving on to something new. About to get this HBO money. Yeah. Let's get it.
Okay. But since he's out, let me just say, Hollywood, let me holler at you for a second. Let an Asian person direct Akira.
Yeah. There's people that can do it.
And put Asian people in it because it's set in Tokyo.
God damn it. Learn from your fucking mistakes.
Please.
You just had Ghost in the Shell flop on your asses. Don't. See, we're going to have to get into this when we talk about TV landscape, but
yeah,
they not learning. They don't want to learn. Nope. And they just going to keep flopping.
Yep.
I guess.
All right. Well, okay, but for Lovecraft Country and Misha Green, we just want to give a big all right.
Janet Mock begins a new column for Allure magazine called Beauty Beyond Binaries. And I'm here for it. It's like Elle and Allure are really... Let me find out. I need to find out who's the editor-in-chief of Allure. Because they're trying to...
They're trying to catch up with Teen Vogue.
We already know that Melissa Harris Perry is working at Elle. So that might be why we're getting such great profiles of Black women there. We already know Ellen Welteroth is at Teen Vogue, so that's why we're getting such great Black girl magic there. But I need to find out what's going on at Allure. Because Janet Mock is writing for them there. And the first column is about her friend Wendy, who's another transgender girl.
Sorry, go ahead.
Wendy was another transgender girl who helped teenage Janet find her own beauty through cosmetics. And Wendy spent the night over at Janet's house and gave her a makeover so she could go into school feeling pretty. And she got a lot of compliments on her look, and it changed something for her. It made her feel more comfortable being a transgender girl in her neighborhood in Hawaii. And Wendy grew up to be a makeup artist. Oh. And she still works with Janet. She did the makeup for Janet's wedding for both of her book covers. Like, they're still friends. I'm just so, I just love this story. It made me feel so good. Mock says in the column, our culture often demeans and devalues the work, the pleasures, and the contributions of women and feminine people.
Yes.
This is in part why beauty culture is dismissed as unimportant and frivolous. But I know beauty to be so much more than what we apply on our faces. And it is in that spirit that I announce Beauty Beyond Binaries, my new column, for Allure.com. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready. This is awesome.
Yeah, I love the way she put that. That's, I mean, everybody, like, really tries to put down people, especially, well, anyone who's into, you know, makeup and fashion and stuff like that. But especially when you kind of from a marginalized identity, stuff like that can be life-saving, you know? And we don't think about that.
So. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Anything feminine will get devalued and demeaned here.
Exactly.
Anything feminine.
Yeah. Plus, I just love that she bonded with her friends over this and their lifelong friends. I'm like, oh, look at
it's
that.
It's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
And I love that she grew up to be a makeup artist.
Yeah.
Like, she just she knew what she wanted. Even Wendy did, even at 13, while Janet was still, she was still getting pressure from her family to be something that she wasn't. And she was still, you know, navigating things and figuring things out for herself. But Wendy knew what she wanted.
Yeah.
And she just went for it.
Yeah.
So Mott continues by saying the column will cover everything from the politics of presentation and undervaluing of femininity to pretty privilege. She says, yes, it's real. Femphobia. Oh. Mm.
Yep.
Yeah, that's, yes, please get into it. And why glam can be a gateway to survival. So, there's going to be interviews and, you know, she wants to get into other people's beauty routines and, find out what that's about. And, I'm ready for it. Bring it on. To Janet Mock and her new column, Beauty Beyond Binaries, and to Wendy, we give Wendy Miyake, I think is her last name in the article. We give a big
squee! All right. Okay, so you may also know, I'm getting all the TV stuff. You may also know that Blackish has finally named its spinoff called Collegeish, and it's been ordered to series on Freeform Television. And in case you didn't know, like I didn't, that is the channel formerly known as ABC Family. And this is the spinoff starring Yara Shahidi, and it will get a 13-episode first season on Freeform, and you put here it's the same network as Shadowhunters. Okay, Dion Cole, who plays Charlie on Blackish, will be an adjunct professor on this, and the backdoor pilot aired earlier this month, and it tested well with ABC's audience, but apparently it was deemed too young, and so it was decided that it would be a better fit for Freeform's demographic. And I have to agree with something that I saw on Twitter. They said, because most people hate the name, and somebody said they should have called it Grownish.
Yeah, that sounds good too. Yeah, that would have been good. Because college-ish does not roll off the tongue, but whatever.
See, Blackish is actually something that we say. You know, that's an actual word. But college-ish is just, that's kind of lazy.
It is, but whatever.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm still happy for this young woman. I mean, how many black girls do we have her age, heading a show, you know?
I wish they could get, I wish her character could get a recommendation from the First Lady like Yara did,
I know,
but
right?
everybody ain't got it like that.
Yeah, I mean, wow, but it has been a while since, because I mean, I didn't really watch a lot of these shows because I was like in my 20s and stuff, but back in like the late 90s, you had, you know, all these high school girls, you know, you had Moesha, you had One on One, you had, you know, the Parkers, you had, there was another show too, I believe. Which one was Kyla Pratt on? Or was that One on One? Yeah, 'cause yeah, 'cause you had a few, you had a block, you know, of shows with, you know, young black girls in lead roles, but they just disappeared. So it's good that, you know, this new generation is coming up now. We're getting another, and maybe we'll start getting some more.
So, I mean, this could be the a different world of this generation. This could be monumental, but I think she's going to Brown, though. I don't think she's going to an HBCU. I'm not sure. I could be wrong. Let me know if I'm wrong. Blackgirlsqueeze@gmail.com.
But we have to figure out who's at the helm of this, because Debbie Allen is the one who made A Different World as great as it was. And so if you don't have a Debbie Allen, you know, it's, yeah, we don't know about how good it's gonna turn out.
And Debbie Allen went where? Where'd she go to school?
Howard.
It's you.
Oh my God, I opened the door, didn't I? I just opened the door.
You did, you did. And I walked right through it. To Yara Shahidi, we give a big Oh, so this will be quick. Layla Hathaway is going on the road with Mary J. Blige. She'll be the special guest on Mary's Strength of a Woman tour. So I don't know if that means she'll be opening up for Mary. She'll be singing with Mary. I don't know what it means, but she's gonna get a lot more. A lot bigger audience to sing to. Singing with Mary J. Blige. So I'm here for it because everybody needs to know and love Layla Hathaway's voice. Jesus.
It's also festival season, it's tour season, so a lot of these black women that, you know, don't get as much mainstream attention, as much radio play as others, please go out and see them. Please go out and check them out. Like I said, if you have a chance to go to Essence Festival, yeah, go listen to Layla Hathaway. It is worth it. It is worth it. 'Cause she's been around for a while too, and hell, songs she was doing in the 90s, they still play.
They still go,
Yeah.
yeah. Baby don't cry, will
Ooh, girl.
always and forever.
Girl. That's still my shit.
Heaven knows.
Yep.
The first version of I'm Coming Back and the second version, although I like the second version better. Second version as Rachelle Ferrell.
Oh.
Shit, Separate Ways. I mean,
Yeah.
she's got some songs. She just, I just, she should have blown up.
Yeah.
But
We don't really appreciate those types of voices, though. Not in the mainstream. Like that type of voice doesn't. They get a following because a lot of us, we do appreciate their music, we appreciate their voices, but they're not the ones who are pushed to be, the it girl or the popular one. And so, yeah.
And I get that maybe I hate this, but people will probably say, "Oh, she does too many ballads." But a voice like that
Yeah.
is not really gonna shine as well on your up tempo bops. I mean, she can do
Yeah.
them. She did one for the Hidden Figures
Yeah.
soundtrack, and it was
Yeah.
amazing. But I feel like a voice like hers needs room.
Yes.
And ballads give her
Yeah.
room. And I guess you can compromise and have her do some mid-tempo stuff,
Yeah.
like she did Better and Better, which was also done by Eric Benet. And that was a kind of mid-tempo kind of groove. I think it was. So yeah, so I mean, she can do that. She can do anything. Hopefully this will give her a bigger audience.
Yeah.
She deserves it.
Yeah.
So to Layla Hathaway, to Mary J. Blige, I still need to get into that
Yeah.
album. I haven't heard it all the way yet. To both of them, I'm looking for them to show out on this tour, and we give them a big
Okay, this will also be quick because one of our favorites around here, Pioneer Katherine Johnson, will be receiving an honorary degree from Spelman College. Katherine G. Johnson will be receiving an honorary degree from Spelman College during the school's commencement on Sunday, May 21st. And if for some reason you don't know this, Spelman is the only black female HBCU in the country. And of course, Johnson was the subject of the book and the film Hidden Figures, and she's known for their mathematics contributions that helped John Glenn orbit around the Earth and the Apollo moon landing. And she's receiving this in addition to other accolades, like she has her own Lego figure. I did not know that, and I want it now. But yeah, I'm so glad to see the one black female college in the country giving her this honor. I mean, when did she graduate from college? Like 1959? Yeah, something.
I don't know. She's like
She's in her 90s.
almost a
Yeah.
hundred. She's a
She's
hundred?
in her 90s. She's like 94, 96. Yeah.
Oh man. And she already received the Presidential Medal of Honor from President Obama
Yes.
just a few
Yeah.
years ago, or last
Yeah.
year. So I'm so glad that she's getting her
Yeah.
flowers. It was late.
Yeah.
They were late coming, but she's getting
Yes.
them. She's able to pick them up
Yes,
herself.
I know, right?
You know what I'm saying? So
Yeah.
yes, everything about this
Yeah.
is good, and they're going to start teaching Hidden Figures in schools, and y'all will finally have something new to write about during Black History
Yes.
Month.
It really just makes me happy to see her and to see if where she smiles,
Just
Long
oh
time
gosh,
coming.
when she
Yeah.
came on,
Oh yeah,
yes,
girl.
when she came on the
Yeah.
Oscars, I bawled.
Yes.
Oh my God, that was
Yeah.
beautiful. So, to Miss Catherine G. Johnson, we give the biggest of Oh, from OK Africa. Oh, we have an article called The Limitless Project explores Black love beyond the norm with four queer African women. The Limitless Project is an ongoing project by Nigerian American photographer and writer Michael Owona. He focuses on subjects who use visual aesthetics to navigate their cultural, sexual, and gender identities to break down the assumption that LGBTQ Africans are un-African. Four Queer African Women is the newest edition of the project, and the series includes three 18-year-olds and one 20-year-old. Maya from Liberia, whose pronouns are she, her, they, them, and I, and
Identifies.
she IDs as queer. Yawande is a US-born Nigerian whose pronouns are she, her, they, them, and also identifies as queer. Amadi, also US-born Nigerian, whose pronouns are she, her, and she IDs as genderqueer, queer, and androgynous. Badu is a 20-year-old New Yorker with an Ivory Coast background whose pronouns are she, her, and she IDs as pansexual and androgynous. Owona says of the project, yes, we face terrible homophobia and transphobia both inside and out of African immigrant communities, but our lives are multidimensional and we are still people. We still laugh, experience joy, love, and more. We find ways to express ourselves and live out full lives as LGBTQ Africans, despite these ostensible limits on our existence, and our visual aesthetics can be a key part of that. This kind of ties in with Janet Mock's beauty article, saying that beauty and glam can be a key to survival. So, Owona continues by saying it pushes a really important conversation about black love beyond a heteronormative binary, love beyond a romantic dimension between friends and within community, and also love and power, also power and love for one's blackness and specifically black womanhood. Hey, I'm here for this. So to this project, again called the Limitless Project, for queer African women, we give a big
And got some more stuff from art, from the art world. And this is an article from Dazed, and it's called These Radical Black Artists Stood Against White Feminism. And it's about the We Wanted a Revolution, Black Radical Women in 1965 to 85, which is an exhibit currently taking place at the Brooklyn Museum in New York City. And if you are there, please go. I've wanted to see this for so long, but I'm nowhere near New York, but if you can go, go see it. The exhibit includes photography, paintings, performance, and other art by more than 40 black women, including filmmaker and Beyoncé influencer Julie Dash, painter Emma Amos, and Southern Vernacular artist Beverly Buchanan. Many of these were activists around the civil rights and black power movements, the women's movement. I think they mean the second wave of feminist movement. The anti-war movement and the gay liberation movement in America. The curator of the exhibit is Catherine Morris, and she is a white lady, and she's championed the work of black women artists who have been underrepresented in the mainstream rhetoric around second wave feminism. She's also the Sackler Family Senior Curator for the Elizabeth A. Sackler Center for Feminist Art. And you can go and read the interview she did with Days about what we can learn from radical Black women and who came before us. So
I don't know. I don't trust it.
I'm willing to give it a shot because I think it's because it's focused on Black women, and I think she's a bit radical with her politics. Like she understands what white feminism is and stays away from it. And so I'm giving her the benefit of a doubt here. Yeah, I'm gonna give her the benefit of a doubt. I mean, she's trying to do the work, so. And that work is centering these Black women. I'm gonna give it a chance. But like I said, it's in Brooklyn. I can't get to it to see it.
Yeah. So to the exhibit called We Wanted a Revolution, Black Radical Women, 1965-85. We give a big last piece of news in our super jam-packed squee-worthy news is a black woman edited a sci-fi fantasy anthology, Hidden Youth, was nominated for a Locus Award. Locus is a major science fiction and fantasy magazine and website, and they just announced their award nominees for the year. And Hidden Youth is among the nominees. It's an anthology edited by Mickey Kendall, who goes by Carnithia on Twitter, and by a spec fic writer, Chesia Burke. This anthology is a companion to the previous anthology called Long Hidden, which was also well received. The Hidden Youth anthology has more of a young adult angle and includes stories of marginalized people around the world in various past eras. Other Black women nominees for a Locus Award include N.K. Jemison for The Obelisk Gate and Sophia Samatar for The Winged Histories. For fantasy novel, Nisi Shaw for Everfair. Jemison is also nominated for her short story, The City Born Great, and Nnedi Okorafor is nominated for Afrofuturist 419. Julie Dillon has also received a nomination as an artist. So to all of these writing-ass Black women, we give a big scream!
I'll be in your company someday.
Someday. Damn it. Yeah. We get into the universe.
But yeah, go check out those nominees, though, because there are a fuck ton of people of color of all types nominated in that. Yes.
Get into it. That's what I need. I wish I had this growing up as a lover of sci-fi.
I tried to,
y'all just don't know how to.
I know, girl. I tried to read a Star Wars novel one time. It was so boring. I only got like to the second chapter. And I love Star Wars, but it was so boring. It was boring.
It was hard.
That's the thing. Like,
y'all keep letting us out of these genres and stuff, and y'all dry without us.
Back in my day, sci-fi and fantasy stuff, it's like Marley Diaz saying it's a variation of White Boy and His Dog.
White Boy
that
and
was
dog.
In all genres. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so
it really was.
Like now, it's like since I've gotten to know some of these people, and I'm like, they have totally renewed my interest in reading speculative stuff, because I didn't read a lot of speculative stuff before, but now it's like, yeah,
like Like, where were the Daniel Jose Olders? When I was growing up, where were they?
Shit. I was a fucking grown ass adult before I ever heard of Octavia Butler, and I just happened to come across her shit in the bookstore and took a chance because I saw a black woman on the cover. I mean, man. Shit. We didn't have N.K. Jemisin. I'm sounding old. We ain't have N.K. Jemisin in my day. We ain't have Sophia Somatar.
Nope.
We ain't have Niecy Shaw.
Nope. We have Niecy Shaw. Nope.
Y'all got it good. So buy they shit. Buy they shit.
Y'all don't know.
Buy they shit and read it.
Thank you. Yes. And read it to your children. Well, some of them. I don't know if you can read too much of N.K. Jemisin to your children. It's a dark place.
These kids probably watching Game of Thrones, okay? They probably watching it.
That's true.
And so, yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I say, look, of course, it's parents' discretion, but it's like, okay, this is what we just read. Let's talk about it now. You know? So, hey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Book club. We should do that. A sci-fi book club. Black sci-fi book club. I guess you like that idea.
Okay.
We'll talk about that later. So that's our squeeze-worthy news, y'all.
It's still me. Okay, so I guess we're moving on to Catch the Fade. And I'm going to try not to just harp on this, but y'all may have read or heard about a article that appeared in The Atlantic this past week. It's this Filipino-American dude, reporter, writer. He wrote a story about a woman that his family had enslaved for 56 years. And this story is posted posthumously. And so throughout the story, the woman is called Lola. Thing is, that's not her name. That is an honorific. Because in Tagalog, I don't know if I said that right, but in the Filipino language, Tagalog, Lola means aunt or grandmother.
Or grandmother.
And so there has just been a lot of discourse going on about it, as it should be. However, a lot of black women who are speaking up about it are refusing to call her, you know, Lola, because they're like, that is not her name. Please call her Eudocia Tomas Pulido, because that is her name. And she did not have her life or her name when she was alive. And there's no other way to put this. She was enslaved. The family who did this to her, they were not good people. You cannot be, like they said, you cannot be a good person and own another human being. Okay? And so black women are pointing this out. And guess what? A lot of people, many of them Filipino, are getting really mad at black women for speaking out about it. Oh, well, this isn't the same context as transatlantic slavery or, you know, the type of slavery you had here in American soil. She was enslaved here in America. Okay? But not only...
Doesn't the article reference black slavery?
I think it did. And that's just really... I watched a lot of, you know, the more outspoken, a lot of the more well-known black women just get attacked for this and just totally... disregarded, you know, the context of the article. It all became about, you have nothing to say about this. But these are the very same people who get mad when they say we talk about black people too much. That, like,
yeah, and say, yeah, and you don't talk about
you don't use
You don't talk about other people of color enough. Y'all don't
the
fight
very
for us
same
enough.
people. I'm like, see, this is why. Because
I did not miss the irony that these black women were told that they have nothing relevant to contribute because of their Western
exactly
gaze.
Suddenly when y'all don't suddenly we're Western, okay?
Suddenly we're Western. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, look, listen, nobody was making an indictment about Filipino culture. Nobody was, you know, making any statement against that. But there is no way any type of slavery is right. And that's what was being pointed out.
And they were speaking about the experience of enslavement in America by people as people who are descended from folks who were enslaved in America. I mean, if that's not, it's not going to give you the authority of somebody who is Filipino living in America, but it gives you some authority to speak on what they were speaking about. They don't know the complexities of Filipino culture,
right,
and they didn't speak on that. They spoke on what they knew and why the article infuriated them and hurt them. And because at first, when I first started seeing mentions of this article on Twitter, everybody was raving about the writing
style. I'm
like,
seriously?
Like, I don't give a fuck. We're talking about a woman's life taken away from her.
I don't give a good goddamn if he wrote War and Peace with this shit.
I don't give a damn if he wrote the Bible.
You know, and he made it about his feelings and like, oh, well, we felt bad. I'm like, did you feel bad enough to free her?
No. And he kept her enslaved so that she could take care of his mother. He did that when he was grown.
Exactly.
And old enough to know better. But keeping her enslaved freed him up to live his life.
She could live her.
And not have...
But y'all want to be mad because we point that out?
And that's something that black women in this country know very well. Because it happened to them during slavery. It happened after slavery. When black women were commonly maids in white folks' houses, doing white women's housework and raising white women's kids. So, and black women were speaking on that. They felt they saw similarities. They saw connections. And because everybody hates black women, people want to get mad. But let us be silent about something that they want us. You know what? We're not your mule. Talk about what the fuck we want to talk about. And as long as we stay in our lane and not try to make some sweeping judgment about Filipino culture or whatever. I say, keep speaking your mind, but They're going to get mad either way. They're going to get mad either way, so fuck it.
Like, hell, next time you want somebody to speak up on some shit that's going down in your community, don't come getting mad if we don't, you know, step up.
No, I'm gonna just be like, I'm gonna chill over here with my Western gaze. I can't.
That shit just made me.
I can't do it on account of my Western gaze. So, you know, just let me.
Would
let
rather
me out of it.
Attack black women for speaking up about something rather than talk about this dude enslaving a woman.
Yeah, why not work collectively to try to get reparations for this woman's family? Or
yeah, but shout out to the people who called out the anti-blackness on it, because a couple of Filipino activists they called out the anti-blackness, and they did exactly what you just said. They started tweeting about organizations and stuff that actually do try to help women like this, you know, which is pretty much kind of what we wanted, you know, because like, okay, this is how, you know, these types of things happen. Well, there are people in the Philippines, there are people here of Filipino descent who do this type of work. And you know what, people were, you know, retweeting that, people were getting that information out, but still, we had to hear, y'all ain't got no business speaking on this. Had to hear that.
Like, yeah, the Western gaze thing really blew me. But
we're Western now. All right. Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna remember that.
All right. Yeah. My Western ass gone will not be. I'm not gonna be here. On the pulpit. Whenever you decide you want my voice. Okay. Because I'm too mired in the Western gaze, so.
Right.
It is what it is, right?
All right, so, that was a quick catch to fade, you know. And, you know, Eudocia Tomas Pulido, we remember your name. Rest in peace, dear. That shouldn't have happened to you. Shouldn't happen to anyone, woman like you, so. All right. So we want to talk about some print now. Yay, print!
Hell yeah!
And can I just say something? Chris asked me, have we talked about your choice yet?
It was going to happen eventually, because I can't stop thinking about this man.
I know you've mentioned him before, but I'm like, I don't think he's been here yet, but I'm like, I've heard his name from you before. But I'm like, okay. But yeah, why don't you start us out and give us a.
All right. My nominee for this week in that print is young Mr. Ricky Riddle, who hails from the UK. He is an actor. He once starred in CW's The 100. He was unceremoniously killed off in a very tacky, racist fashion. Afterward, he, made reference to on Twitter. He is gorgeous. He is, he has modeled before, and he can easily model again because he's just lovely. 6'2", born December 31st, 1981, in Oldham, United Kingdom. His father is Jamaican. And he's more well known now as the star of American Gods on Starz. He plays Shadow Moon, And I don't know, I like in some pictures he looks
Yeah.
really light skinned, but on the
Well,
show he looks really brown,
but
like a
I
really
think that
warm
has to do with the
brown.
lighting,
And
because Brian Fuller does not light his shows. They're just all dark.
Well, yeah, and I don't know, because because a
Yeah.
lot of pictures tend to
Yeah, that's
whitewash
true.
and make black folks look lighter than they actually are, because
Yeah.
they do that with Kerry Washington all the time, and she's like a
Yeah,
medium
that's true.
brown skinned person. She's, but people out here thinking that she light skinned because of the way
Yeah.
she's been whitewashed in pictures. Anyways, on the show, his skin looks really
Yeah.
warm, deep brown. It's
Yes.
beautiful. So I kind of instantly fell in love the moment he took off his shirt. Or when he wears those tight t-shirts, Lord Jesus.
Yes.
The melanin be popping, the pecs be popping. Jesus, he is gorgeous. I was distracted the first two episodes by how gorgeous he was. I really was. I was like, he, I was like watching the first episode,
Yeah.
like, he just so fine. He's so fine. He's so fine. Don't fuck that white woman. He's so fine. He is so fine. Like, this was me through the whole first episode. I mean, spoilers, he was at his wife's funeral, and this other lady was so twisted from grief and
I know.
Ativan and alcohol and all this kind of stuff that, she was trying to hump him on a goddamn over a goddamn grave, and I'm just screaming about how she's trying to keep her dignity. Lord, the white women on this show are so
Well,
extra.
yeah.
But back to Ricky. He's like distractingly fine, and yes, so it is a pleasure to watch him every week on American Gods. Hopefully he'll hit, maybe he'll okay, fuck it. I'm waiting for Full Frontal. We're getting it from a lot of the other actors. Show us the goods, Riddle. Show
It's only
us
fair.
Little Whittle, or Big Whittle,
It is only
whatever you
fair.
want to call him. Thank you. Don't be scared. Don't be scared, but I'm sure it's pretty.
Okay, so.
So yes, that's my nominee, Ricky Whittle.
Yes.
So brown and pretty,
Well,
so
speaking
lovely.
of brown and pretty on American Gods, I have to, oh yes, I
In
have
Full
to
Frontal.
put in a good word. I hope I say his name correctly. From Moussa Kreish. He is also an actor. If you haven't watched the show for some reason, he plays the djinn, and he was introduced in the second episode actually, and it actually comes back to the third episode. But I heard when the show before the
Yeah.
show ever aired, there was like gonna be apparently a really good gay sex scene in it. And well, didn't have to wait too long for it because episode three, Lord have mercy.
That's the that's the
Yes.
most beautiful love scene I've seen in a long
Definitely on a
time,
TV
gay,
show.
straight, what have
That
you.
shit just
That was
knocked it
just.
out of the park. I mean, it was just so, it was really intimate. It was really, that's the thing. They were attentive to each other, you know? And they had a connection. See, like, remember I wrote in for your show for Ratchet Research, give me my porn with a plot. Give me characters I like. I liked Celine, you know, because he was just poor thing. He's just having a horrible life, really horrible life. And he, the person who happens to stop the cab during the rain that night, the Jan, and he connects with him. And I just love it that he knocks on, when he gets out of the cab, knocks on the window and shoots his shot. I'm in room 318. Oh, and boy, how this paid off. Oh, it paid off. I'm gonna put it this way.
Lord.
I know it was a prosthetic. I don't care.
No,
It was. Oh, now Musa,
no. Why would you
he talks, he talk,
say
he talked about it. He said he thinks, he's like, well, I believe they gave me about 11 inches. He said, I believe they gave me about 11 inches, but his you know, his question though was, shouldn't it be browner?
Oh my God, I have never seen. Lord, we, I fuck it. It's this week in that friend. I've never seen a dick. I've never seen a dick
Don't
that
think I
brown
have
on
either.
TV. I mean, that whole scene was a
Oh,
revelation. But
girl.
when he dropped that towel, I was like, "Holy shit!" One,
You are a god.
you
You
are
are a god
blessed.
indeed. I know which god I'm
Wow,
following.
that I've never
That
seen.
shit was almost to his
Oh,
knees.
that yeah. I was like, and I've never seen. That's another thing. You rarely see full frontal, and you rarely see brown and
Yep.
black men full frontal. Why? And why is that? Like, why would he? 'Cause like that dick pic in the second episode,
Yeah.
that was nasty looking. I
It
mean, it
was
was
just crude.
big, but
It was just crude
ain't
and
nobody want to see that
unnecessary.
shit. I mean, you was married to Shadow Moon,
And
man.
died
Put
with
your
it
mouth
on.
around
Never
that. Anyway,
mind. Spoiler. Yep.
in your throat. Anyway,
Yep. But oh my gosh,
listen.
Musa Preish, that's a ooh, he thick too. Thick too with that beard. Girl.
The beard. Okay. First of all, we got to talk about the thickness, because remember you brought it up. Yeah, his chest ain't the only thing that's thick. Or that, and that beard was thick too. And also the peen. It was just. I would not blame you if you paused the picture after he drops the towel and just did a little praise dance, did a little thank you to whatever higher power
Girl.
you want, 'cause
And let me tell you, it's like
whew.
even though his eyes have flames in them and all, even though that, you can still see the way he keeps looking at Salim. And I, oh,
And the way they just, the
yes,
way they
yeah, I
tenderly touched
just,
each other, it
that
was
whole
lovely.
sequence just melted me. Even from the time in the cab when Salim, you know, first he wakes him up, but then he puts his hand on his shoulder and the Jinn, you know, caresses his hand. Oh my God.
Yeah. Or when he
Yeah.
touches his shoulder and his
And then
eyes
he
start
realizes who
light
he
up
is, and
like.
Salim realizes who he is, and I'm like, oh my God, it was just all done so perfectly. And Musa's fine. He's like 42.
Yeah, he's my age.
And
Yeah,
he's
he's almost
fine as
35.
fuck.
Like, even without the beard, because I'm looking at some pictures of him with,
Really?
like, just some
Oh, Lord.
scruff. He fine as
He
all the fucks. But that beard
Yes.
is one of the
Yeah.
great beards of our time. I'm saying it now. Yes. It was, ooh,
Oh,
it was
yeah.
just thick, and you know it was
Just,
soft.
I know. Just, Lord have mercy. Musa, you
So,
fine. You fine.
you fine. You fine.
And thank you so
Oh.
much for giving us the full Monty. He said, shouldn't it be
It could have been
browner?
brown.
Like, motherfucker, look at me. What color do you think my dick is? Yeah.
It was hella brown. I was here for it. I was here for it.
God.
Woo. I'm running out of words. I'm running out of words that I can say and still feel good about myself, so let me
But
stop.
oh yeah, Musa, bless you because you are blessed. You blessed. Yeah,
Yes,
very.
mwah. Magnifique.
Ooh, shit. But
Magnifique.
oh, and also what I was saying about the second episode, when you see him first, this is how you know it's like these are different flashbacks and stuff. He's wearing Salim's suit.
Yeah,
Yeah, because
my sleep suit.
when he leaves the next day after he slept with Celine, he left Celine his clothes, his IDs and stuff, and his cab. So he kind of really does grant wishes, even though he said he didn't. Musa finna get a follow on Instagram.
Oh, here we
Finna get a
go with the
thirst trap
thirst
because.
follows. Man, if he's I and I pray he's as much as of a
Oh,
thirst trap
shit.
as Louis Tan, 'cause just walk around all day with no shirt on, snapping pictures. Just do that for me, for the culture, for the
Well,
gram. Just
speaking of thirst
do
traps,
it.
walking around naked for the culture, do we want to talk about? If you have
Get
not
it.
heard of Jake Choi like I hadn't over the, for the past couple of weeks ago, need to get your life straight. Because good Lord, Jake Choi is fucking fun. I mean, God damn, he fun. I mean, and like I said, he really be really kind of naked a lot. So they did a live tweet of romance, this gay romance he was in called Front Cover, which I'm gonna check out because it's on Netflix. But he, oh Lord, have mercy, he's fine as fucking this. And he did an interview last year when he was talking about the film, and he's with Salon, and he's talking about how Asian men are presented not as sex symbols. And I want to read something that he says. He says, Asian men in media are so desexualized and emasculated. I wish I knew why. Sessue Hayakawa was one of the first Hollywood sex symbols in the early 1900s. He was actually the first. So he was the Asian. He was an Asian male to open a Hollywood film with a female love interest. A lot of white women would go see his films. I think a lot of the fear comes from that, where executives notice that their women like this Asian guy. So maybe we should assassinate his character and sexuality. If you look at the timeline of his career, you can see a change. Part of it is fear and racism, and Asian women can be with a white man because you're not compromising white male sexuality and dominance and perception and straight white male insecurity. Asian men are emasculated. Ads do a better job than films to portray sexy Asians. When Jet Li and Aaliyah made Romeo Must Die, they shot a kissing scene, but it was cut from the film. An Asian man kissing a woman is never shown, which is the emasculation. And I do believe, I could be mistaken, but I do think I saw that Jake Choi has a black girlfriend. Yeah, I'm looking at his Instagram. He got some Black Lives Matter stuff and some. He's got like a picture of Trayvon here on the anniversary of his passing and stuff, along with some of his naked stuff. So yeah.
All right, stay woke, boo. Stay woke. I'm not. I don't use the word. Use the term woke bae no more. Well, I never used it, but it's definitely, it's definitely overrated. So, but
Yep, his girlfriend is black.
stay
His
woke.
girlfriend is black. She got
Stay
braids.
fine.
All right.
Hey. But yeah, he and Daniel Wu reference Romeo Must Die. So I guess maybe a lot of Asian actors know about that omission from the film and are really
I don't
bothered
blame
by
him.
it. Okay. Because that's why we have Vale on Into the Badlands, and yeah, and now Jake Choi is bringing that up. So, yeah, see what y'all do, and y'all try to push people down, and they
Oh,
come back
yeah.
up with a vengeance. Now they kissing black women. See?
But
What you
yeah,
gonna
Jake,
do with
I would
that?
be watching front cover because apparently
So.
there are some good love scenes in that too, and I want to see it. But yeah, yep.
Hey, fingers
But yeah,
crossed for full frontal.
Jake be on Twitter doing his woke bae shit and also talking a lot of shit. And I'm like, all right, Jake, I see you. I see you.
Okay. Let's see that
You
print.
damn near
Oh,
about
sorry.
giving it.
Let's hey.
Look at
Don't
his
play.
Instagram.
Don't play.
Look. Ooh, girl.
Let's put him in a romper. Let's put all of these men in a romper. Lord Jesus, we need to see Musa in a romper for
Yes.
the
Rumpus for everybody.
Ooh. Yes, Lord. Yes, tight ones. And then we'll pour water on him and oh my God. Is it time to do women's vocab?
I know. Woman's
Good night, Mary.
vocab. Identity politics. Identity politics refers to the use of group collective identities to base one's political action and analysis. Many use the term to claim that people with marginalized identities side on issues that lie with popular perceptions among this particular collective. They also view identity politics as a zero-sum factor in that something that helps one group will inevitably harm another, which is bullshit. Identity politics.
Yeah, that's why the people that are most against
Exactly.
it are white men.
Exactly.
Because they have nothing to gain from it. And they think if they lose anything, then they're being marginalized.
And it's the
If they
thing,
give up
you give
any
up
of their
privilege, you're not really
privilege.
losing anything. You're really just not losing anything. What's happening is just that somebody else is just getting the rights and shit that you've had all along. You did not lose anything.
Yeah, but obviously they don't get
Exactly.
it because look where we are now. Look who's in the White House,
The
fucking up
world.
the entire country. Because white men are scared about political correctness and identity politics and somebody actually getting rights,
Yep.
human rights, other than them. They're full, the full
Yep.
range of human rights.
All right, Black Girl Commandments.
Right, keep shining. That's all.
Shining. All right. Yes. Okay, so that is our show. If you want to contact us, you can find us both on Twitter at Black Girl Squee. I am individually at Indus Corner, and DD is individually at Death Starter. We are on Tumblr at blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com. You can contact us at email at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. We are also on iTunes. You can look us up there. Give us a 5-star review and a rate, a 5-star rating and a review. And we are also